Hello, everyone, and welcome to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler, and I'm so happy that you've joined us. Part of what drives my coaching career, and by extension this podcast, is to provide hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. I believe that there is tremendous power in choice. We are confronted with choices from the time we wake up in the morning until the time our heads hit the pillow at the end of the day. Will I choose to believe in possibilities for myself? Or will I choose to believe in my limitations? Will I choose courage? Or will I choose fear? Will I choose to listen to those who believe in me? Or will I choose to listen to those who doubt me and tell me that I'm not good enough? Will I choose to do the work that I know that I need to do in order to move towards my desired future? And will I choose that consistently, every day, not just once or not just for a couple of weeks, but every day for the long haul? I spent about 10 years of my life recovering from an illness that one doctor said I only had a 3% chance of recovering. And here's what I learned. I had to choose possibilities. Even when I wasn't even fully sure of what those could be, I had to choose courage. I had to choose to listen to those who believed that I would recover. And I had to do the tedious, grinding work that at the beginning seemed so bleak and so far away from any sort of desirable future. But I knew one truth. If I did nothing, nothing would change. And at least I was going to give myself a chance at a desirable future. This podcast was created to help you make the choices that will propel you towards your desired future. So what are we waiting for? Let's get to this week's episode. Today, I have two guests joining me. Both of them have, in their own words, journeyed to the false summits of success only to realize that there was nothing meaningful there for them. Instead of just reading you their bios, I'm going to jump right in and let them tell you their stories in their own words. Their names are Dan Wilkins and Joe Colavito, and it's time to meet them. Joe, Dan, thank you so much for joining me on the Unyielded podcast.
Oh, it's so good to be here with you, Bobby. And Dan, nice to reconnect with you, even though it's only been an hour or two.
Excited to be here, Bobby. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. I've been looking forward to this conversation. I know that we've all known each other for a while, but I thought for our listeners here, it'd be really great to kind of get started with your journeys. Because Joe had sent me a message, and it was the line that intrigued me was, the journeys where you have traveled to the false summit of success. And so I thought that'd be a great place to start. So Dan, do you want to jump in and share your story?
Yeah, the false summit of success. Wow. Yeah, poster child for that, it seems. And so, and really just recently have I come down from that summit and through a valley of change, and I'm making progress up toward a more purposeful peak. So, but yeah. Out of just life experience, you know, I have in my 20s, I was going to go and save the world and got a master's degree in counseling. And, you know, after a couple of years of that, realized, hey, who am I as a 20-year-old to go share, you know, guidance and life experience with others? And so out of fear and out of insecurity, I ran away. I ran off. And that led me into a life of going into sales roles. And had some success in numerous roles, but that pattern, sort of that foundational pattern, that false summit that I had been on in the past, tended to reoccur and come back up. That pattern of fear, that pattern of insecurity, and really just saying, uh-oh, before I'm exposed, right? I better run off to a new location. And so, you know, it took me, I think, some years, took some maturity to really come to a place of truth. And it also took a hobby to bring that out in me. And so I started ultra running and quickly caught the bug and realized that you can't really hide in an ultra marathon. The truth comes out eventually, right?
Yeah.
And so this was, I'll just kind of fast forward to this part. This was my third ultra marathon in your great state in Colorado, a 100-mile race. And, you know, I was at a bad point in life. I had job turnover. I was in a job I wasn't quite, didn't feel aligned to. And I was out there in Colorado trying to prepare for this race and be present for this race. But I was really thinking about work and thinking about, man, I got to find a new gig. I got to escape this fault summit. And so my heart wasn't really in the race, even though I had trained for it and was with a running partner that we had sort of made a promise that, hey, we're going to stick through this thick and thin. And I get to mile 50, I'm struggling. You know, again, my heart wasn't in it. My head wasn't in it. And we get, it's right before dark. We get to this fire pit in the middle of the woods. And there are a couple of volunteers sitting around this fire. And I plop down, I'm just spent. And I look up and it's Jen Shelton. And so I don't know if many listeners know who Jen Shelton is, but she's this famous character from this book called Born to Run. I love that book. It's super famous. It's a New York Times bestseller. And she's in that book. And there she is sitting at this campfire. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. And I go, hey, you're Jen Shelton. And she goes, yeah, yeah. That, you know, what's your name? I go, I'm Dan. And I'm about to drop. And she looked at me and she goes, drop out, Dan. And so talk about going from, you know, a low point to an even lower point. Here's my hero that you know, that just defined this season of life so eloquently for me. And really what it defined me is I was a dropout. I was a runaway. And I'll just kind of pause there, but that triggered lots of future events that led me on a much more purposeful path.
Yeah. Wow. First of all, was that the Leadville 100?
That was called the Run Rabbit Run 100, and it's in Steamboat. And so you start at the base of the ski mountain and run up straight up the ski mountain and back into the national forest there. It's a beautiful race. And I'm actually doing it again this September for a little redemption.
Nice. Well, you were asking where we were, right? Steamboat is not that far away from us. It's Rabbit Ears Pass away.
Okay.
You know, so that's okay. Man.
Awesome. Did not know that. That's great, Bobby.
Yeah. So something that you said there, Dan, really caught my attention when you said it defined the season of your life or something like that. That had to be a tough moment.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. Because it really, when you're kind of running away from things, you don't necessarily want to look truth in the face. And there it was. And so I look back on my life and can really pinpoint, hey, gosh, I was just kind of building houses on sand, not really, there was no firm foundation. And there was a point shortly after that wasn't quite the lowest point. There was a lower point right after that I can speak to that's really kind of triggered and anchored Joe and I in this new mission and this new business. But yeah, that the whole being a dropout is a season that of refinement. And so, you know, adversity can be a good thing. It can be a point for change. And I needed to hit rock bottom before I was fully present and aware of these patterns that have evolved through the years. And so, awesome wake up call. And I love Jen Shelton, by the way. I eventually hired her to be my coach for the next 100-mile race. So if she's listening to this, she needs to know that she's awesome. So
wow. She played a really big role too.
She did. Yeah.
You know, and it's funny because I'm reading a book right now. Well, it's not funny. I'm reading a book on coaching. Who's surprised by that? And one of the things they talk about is as a coach, sometimes you're there to hold up a mirror. And that is exactly what it sounds like she did for you. And it can be such a powerful, powerful moment because it's when we can say, yes, I embrace that image or no, I have to make a change.
So yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And Joe,
tough. Coaches provide tough love, right?
Yeah. And sometimes it's tough to do that, you know? Yeah. And Joe, we're going to get to your story too. Dan, I want to know what happened next.
Yeah. And so, you know, you always want to be present, right? And you also always want to be purposeful. You also want to be deliberate and intentional. And you never really want to give your pain a voice. And if you're living a life out of purpose, it's easier to be present. It's easier to be intentional. It's easier to be patient. But without that foundation, it was easy for me just to, you know, say whatever I was feeling and let that guide me. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, okay. And then, so I stood up, we kind of laughed about that. And I stood up maybe 2 minutes later, walked about 100 yards and threw up all over the place.
Oh.
And then what I haven't shared is this guy that is, you know, connected to me and Joe, Thad was my running buddy. He was with me throughout all this. He was encouraging me and it's like, all right, let's just walk to the next aid station. Let's get your legs under you. You know, we can do this. And so basically walked about another 6 miles to the next aid station. It's like, man, I'm done. I'm tapping out. This story is already written. And I felt better, right? Because I'd made the decision, no more pain. I could shut it down. And so I get in the bus to drive me down off the mountain. And this is in the middle of the night by now, dark. And this bus is driving down the road and it's passing Thad, my best friend, that we've made this pact to complete this race together. And off I see him running by himself alone. And it completely broke my heart. And that was the low point. That was the point where, hey, this race wasn't just about me. And, you know, I was his pacer. I was getting from him, but I was also giving to him. And now that's gone. And it completely broke me.
Yeah.
And so there's a bit more. I don't know if you want, I could finish that story off or I could come back to it because.
Yeah, let me help him finish that story, Bobby. So
go ahead, Joe.
When you first told me this, Dan, and you said my heart broke, you actually said I could hear it.
Yeah.
You literally could hear it snap. And then I wish you would just continue and share what happened for the next couple of hours.
Yeah. And so it took me a long time to get down the mountain and finally get back to where, you know, the hotel room. And I couldn't sleep, you know, and I think I maybe slept an hour or two, and I get up and all I can think of is this renewed energy, this new complete mission, this whole new mindset of, I got to go to Thad. I have to run to Thad. And so this race that was about me and getting this belt buckle and getting this accomplishment shifted completely the other direction to, I got to go pace Thad. I got to get him to the finish line. And all of the stomach problems, all of the tiredness was completely gone. So I take a gondola halfway up the mountain and then run about another 4 or 5 miles and find Thad on the trail. And he's, you know, working his way toward the finish line. His eyes are wild and wide open. He was hallucinating. He was thinking a mountain lion was chasing him. He's emerging from the darkness. He'd been running all night by himself. And I find him and he's like, oh my, I'm so glad you came. And I had this heart just that was broken a few hours earlier that was just full of joy and enthusiasm and energy. And I was like, I got you, buddy. I'm here. Let's go. And, you know, I'm cheering him along the way. I had, you know, I easily, you know, it was a completely new me. And so we're running down the mountain. I'm just pulling him down the mountain and rooting him on. And we get to the finish line and I pull back, watch him cross the finish line. And literally that was, I kind of joked with him afterwards, said, surprise, you know, I never was going to run this race. I actually just came out here to be your pacer. And we kind of laughed about that, but there's something to that. There's a life lesson in there about, you know, being other-centered and what we're really called to do on this earth, which is be purpose pacers for others. And that's the light bulb that's gone off in my mind, in my heart, that's really shifted me. And it's, you know, we're all running with one purpose toward five different peaks. And it's, you know, it's our family, it's our friends, it's our career, it's our the communities that we serve in, and it's the causes that we, you know, that we care about. And that's the one constant thread that runs throughout all of them. And so that was a Kairos defining moment for me, going from, you know, a point of brokenness to a point of purpose.
Yeah. And I love the way you put that, a point of brokenness to a point of purpose. And I want to get more to the purpose pacers for others. That's a little bit of a tongue twister for me, but I want to get back to that in a couple of minutes, because I know that you and Joe have kind of, you know, you're on an exciting adventure here. Joe, do you want to share your story? And then we'll dive into some of those good stuff.
Can we go back to the part where I said Dan could go first? Because now that he went first, my story just seems so boring.
You're the one that said Dan go first. So no, my friend, you're stuck.
I'm going to go back a little further. So, you know, I remember in high school being very excited to come home and report to my parents, I know what I want to be when I grow up. I want to be a teacher just like you. So my mom was a fifth grade teacher. My dad was an elementary school principal. And I was sure that I was born, you know, to at least from a work standpoint, be a teacher. And I couldn't even get the words out of my mouth. And my father, who I love and best is downstairs, by the way, I'm blessed to still have him with me at 86. And he goes, oh, you don't want to do that. You won't make enough money. And that was it. Teaching was out. Engineering was in, because the folks that lived in the other neighborhood and worked at IBM made more money, and they had nicer cars, and they vacationed in better places. And so here you go. Competitive Joe is off to start running up the Falls Summit.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Competitive Joe is not Engineering Joe, and he's horrible at all the things you have to take to become an engineer. And so just when I was about to fail out with my first semester of college, I was blessed with mononucleosis. And not many people consider that a blessing, but it was awesome because it was so bad that I actually had to be hospitalized for a couple of days. And it allowed me just in time to get a withdrawal from all my courses with no record, no blemish on my transcript.
Oh, so a little luck there.
Yes. I go back into the business school, and within weeks, I've got the light bulb again. It's like, oh, I love psychology, how people operate, what makes them tick, what makes some high performers and others not, and how they make decisions. And like, this is so cool, but I want to do it through a different lens, which is marketing. So I'm going to major in marketing. I'm going to minor in psychology. And I'm going to tell my favorite professor, Wayne, the marketing professor, this is the plan. To which he says, you don't want to do that. You won't get a job. So the first two things that I really wanted to be when I grew up wouldn't make enough money and I wouldn't get a job. So by default, I became an accountant. Apparently,
what else could you do?
Yeah. I mean, by default, you know, apparently accountants are going to get a job every time, which I did. I went to Penn State for an accounting degree. I got an offer from all of the Big Eight, and I rushed off to go into the most boring job I've ever been in my life. I sucked it up for a couple of years, then finally realized it's not for me. And if you fast forward the tape, I had 10 jobs in 16 years because every one of them was not a place that I belonged. I wasn't in my identity. I wasn't operating in my purpose. I was out of alignment. And what that does is everything Dan just said. It leaves you, you know, you're running off course, you're running on empty, and you feel like you're running out of time.
Yeah. And those are not good feelings.
As you'll see today, I've got my shirt that I got from my optometrist as a reminder of what we are trying to do at Trexigai. And that is, we're trying to give people a new lens on life.
Yeah.
There's a new lens on life. And it's not running after paychecks and running after belt buckles and running after second homes. It's running on purpose so that you get this renewable and sustainable energy that you literally can't turn off.
Yeah. And I like how you put that. And I know that you'd also sent me an email, something like, encourage people to learn to run on purpose before they wake up one day and realize that they have run off course, run out of fuel, and run out of time to experience life's full potential.
Yeah. And so we'll go back to Dan in a moment. We'll have him share his purpose and his promise, which, by the way, we connected on May 14th, just a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And I helped him refine his purpose because that's part of what I do from a career standpoint. I love other people. I love other people's stories, but I really like it when they can see themselves clearly and then kind of put that into action.
Yeah.
But my purpose is to encourage everyone to realize life's full potential, or, you know, experience life's full potential. And my promise is to never let you settle for less. And
yeah.
So whatever the conversation is, it could be at Publix with the woman in front of me that's short $3. And while I'm giving her the $3, I'm asking her, so how's life? What's going on in your world? Oh, just slogging through my job, you know, just trying to get to retirement. I'm like, you're 34. That's a long run to get to retirement, right?
It's a lot of years to settle. Yeah. So that's your purpose. Dan, what about you? How do you define your purpose?
Yeah. And it's like Joe said, it's pretty fresh out of the oven, you know, from May. And that's really Joe's gift. I mean, since I've known Joe since 2003, he's really been living this out of helping people define, you know, these experiences that they've had and really just sort of pinpoint and pull out the meaning behind it. And he gets more enthusiastic and excited by other people's stories than I've ever seen. I've always loved that and about Joe and been envious about that. I want to be other centered too. I want to have enthusiasm for things outside of myself. And so it's always attracted me to Joe because he's truly gifted at it. And so, yeah, I was leaning on him because I was, you know, I was feeling that the stars were aligning around May. He and I have been talking since January sort of about these things. And so he had had just this awesome experience at this Purpose Summit. And so we come together and after some heartfelt conversations and had this amazing moment. And we're just, you know, he's listening to my story. We're kind of talking about how things are coming together. And we came up with my purpose, which is to be a pacer for others to run with endurance toward joy. Mm. And so if I can do that with my family, if I can do that with my work and serving others, if I can do that in my neighborhood or, you know, the causes that I care about, if I can be a pacer for others to run with endurance, patient endurance toward joy, then at the end, you know, in my deathbed, then it will be a life worth lived. And my promise is to always remind you why you entered the race. Mm. So why did you become a coach, Bobby? Why did you marry Rick?
Yeah.
You know, why did you, you know, start this project over here? And so it's bringing you back to that reminding and what Joe said, there's kind of a play on words of really what you think drives, you know, your heart. And so that's where the Trexigai process really begins is really seeing your condition and how you think about yourself and your situation.
Yeah. Now, I noticed that you guys talk about both the purpose and the promise. Mm-hmm. And that's a little different than what I've heard some people talk about. So why are both of those important?
Yeah. So I'm going to have you use your imagination, but if your purpose...
No, I'm not using my imagination, Joe.
if your purpose is a light bulb, and I could go yank my lamp.
No, that's okay.
If you want me to, right? But if your purpose is a light bulb, everyone has a light bulb. Everyone has a purpose. It's our built-in navigation system. It kind of lights up where we're going. It lights up the room when we enter. Okay. Well, that purpose left unattached to a promise. So unless I put that into the lampstand and connect it to the wall and turn it on and use it, that purpose does nobody any good. It's just fancy words written in a book somewhere. So the promise actually makes it actionable, measurable, and accountable. So from this point forward, Bobby, as I extend my purpose to you, my purpose is to encourage you to experience life's full potential. And my promise is to never let you settle for less. If we're having a conversation and you're talking about starting this podcast, which we did have that about a year ago, mm-hmm. and I'm like, yeah, go ahead and start it. Like, what do you think I should name it? Oh, any name will be good. I immediately broke my promise to you.
That's right.
Not any name is good. Unyielded is good, right? And then unyielded with meaning behind it is even better, right? And so you will know when somebody has a purpose and a promise, both sides know the exact moment that they broke it, which is why Dan's heart got broken in the bus watching his running mate go by in the dark.
Yeah.
He knew. He didn't know that he had a purpose and a promise written. He knew he had one.
Yeah. It just wasn't expressed yet, maybe. Okay. So then, Dan, did you want to say something there?
No, you nailed it. Yeah. It was unconscious. I didn't, you know, it was under the surface and I hadn't really dug it up yet.
Yeah.
I didn't. And there's a point of ownership, right? I think that comes through that process from really working with somebody who, you know, has lived this out like Joe and has some gifts to share. You know, it's an intimate process that you go through to talk about your trials and your triumphs and really use those as a map to define, you know, not only who you are, but how can you, and that's really how Joe and I have redefined purpose. It's an individual's unique design to make life better for others. Mm. And so what is your unique design to make life better for others?
I love that.
There's a story there that needs to be unearth.
And, yeah, if I could, Bobby, just to pick up on that, let's shift it over to you for just a second. If you look back at your life and you just let the trials and the triumphs, if you let yourself just sit in those for a while, there's some trial that eventually became a triumph that led to unyielded.
Mm-hmm. Or a series of them.
Yeah, or a series of them, right? But it's like we have to experience it before we can get fired up about going to share it, right? So, you know, there's things Dan could do for a new ultra runner that you and I can't do.
That's right.
There's things you can do for a new coach that Dan and I wouldn't do as well because your whole life has been coaching, right? Mm-hmm. And there's things that I can do as somebody who literally just, for whatever reason, just gravitates to people's stories and I can help them tell them better than they can tell themselves. And actually help them see that cornerstone that's in the middle of it as their purpose. And it's a gift I had to lean into at some point and say, you know what? I just feel like doing that. And if I can figure out a way to monetize it and make it a business, cool. But if not, I'm just going to do it anyway.
Yeah. I think that's important too. It's what you're drawn, you know, it's what you're drawn to do. Like you almost can't help yourself. So with that in mind, because a lot of times, you know, we hear the conversations around you should have a purpose and I don't disagree at all. What if a person is sitting there or listening, thinking, but I don't know what my purpose is? Or like Dan, hadn't expressed it yet. I mean, obviously they should connect with you guys, but where do they go? Where do they start?
Yeah. So we like to say, start at the crossroads. Okay. Start at the crossroads. So, you know, stand at the crossroads of your life, look back, unearth some of these trials and triumphs. Ask other people that have been, you know, with you on those paths. And there's four questions that form the crossroads. Number one, what do I do best? So there's this thing that you kind of know, right, that you do best.
Yeah.
The second one is what makes my heart jump most? So there's something that when you're doing it best also happens to make your heart jump. It's the third one people like to squirm out of, but it's really, really important. What greatly disturbs me? Like to the point where I can't watch it. I can't listen to it. I can't let that keep happening. Okay. And then the final one is how do I make a lasting impact? Not just an impact, because a bad boss can make an impact. But how do I make a lasting impact? So stand at the crossroads and look at those four questions. And you will see yourself in this mirror that you referred to earlier, but you know, you'll see yourself more clearly. So one of the things that we really like to do is look somebody in the eye and say, we want you to turn to a clear vision of you. Because mm-hmm. when you turn to a clear vision of you, now you can go out and help others. Like you can benefit others. You can make life better for others.
Yeah. I love that. And I love the third question. What greatly disturbs you? And Joe, and I'm going to ask both of you. So Joe, what greatly disturbs you?
Yeah, I actually am going to borrow Marcus Aurelius's quote. It's 1900 years old. So I hope you don't mind me going old school.
Okay. Really old school.
Whenever I read this quote or share it in an environment like this, it literally makes my heart jump and breaks my heart. And it's that hybrid fuel that keeps me going every day. Okay. Mm-hmm. People who labor all of their lives, but have no purpose to direct every thought and impulse toward are wasting their time, even when hard at work.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Mm-hmm. It hurts, you know? Wow. And Dan, what about you? What disturbs you?
Yeah. And so it's all about time, right? So the clock's always ticking. And I see that every day with my two boys that are 15 and 11. And so, you know, I came to a realization that, you know, I can either continue along this path of this sort of aimless, sort of out of alignment, run away, Dan, versus run to Dan. And so I had to own it, right? I had to look in the mirror and own it. And I can't give them what I don't have. Can't give them what I ain't got, right? That's how we say in Georgia. But, and so that's what I'm doing now is I'm owning it. You know, I've had, you know, I've worked for seven different companies over, you know, since Joe and I met. And, you know, I have had some awesome experiences from those, but I think now it's time to live in truth a bit and to share some of this truth with others. And so, yeah, the furnace of adversity, I think, has molded me to this point. And so now I feel like I'm ready to walk in a completely different light.
Yeah. And I love that image, the furnace of adversity, because sometimes that's really what it is. And it has a great way of revealing, I guess, our character to us, you know. And I'll tell you guys, when you said what greatly disturbs me, you know, when you're posing those questions, instantly it was the when people choose to believe in their limitations instead of their potential. And I think to my dying breath, I don't care if I'm out cross country skiing and I see people that they can barely stand up on the skis, I will stop. And they're, you know, it's hard. It's a hard sport. And if you don't take a lesson, it's frustrating. And it's like, don't give up, man. Just, you got to make it through the first time out. You can't give up. And yes, it's hard and whatever, but that's what gets me fired up, you know? So I love those four questions at the crossroads.
Say that one more time for me, what really greatly disturbs you.
When people choose to believe in their limitations and not their potential.
Yeah, when people choose to believe in their limitations versus their potential. Mm-hmm. That's at the core of what we're doing, right? So we've got a three-step process. We need you to see your condition. You know, is there a place where there's limitations you place on yourself, right? Now you can change your direction. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately you can lead your mission towards your full potential, right? So you got to see to change to lead. And that mirror that you've been talking about is what we, you know, believe we need to provide for people, because people's self-talk.
Oh,
it's so ingrained and it's so damaging. Like nobody would ever talk to them the way they talk to themselves.
No. I had a coach one time ask me, because I was going on and on, I was, you know, I was in my late 20s, early 30s, whatever. And I was going on some tangent about how bad I was, apparently. And she said to me, she's like, would you ever talk about a friend the way you're talking about yourself right now? I'm like, never. I wouldn't talk about an enemy that way, for crying out loud. But our self-talking, I think people dismiss self-talk like, oh, yeah, yeah. No. It's grounded in neuroscience. The way we talk to ourselves really matters. So is that part of the, let me see if I can say this word right, the Trexigai process that is that part of it? Or is that it?
Yeah, that's absolutely at the core. And we actually have, and I don't want to get into the details, but we have two different scientific ways of measuring that. So we can measure what somebody's self-talk is in sales, and we can measure what everyone else's self-talk is in roles outside of sales. And so we actually have diagnostic tools to do that, because here's the truth that you just referred to. What I say to myself influences how I feel about myself. Mm-hmm. And what I feel dictates what I do. So if I say that I'm bothering people when I make a sales call, then I'll feel like I'm an intruder and I'm a bother, right? And therefore, I won't do what I should do, which is pick up the phone and make a call with comfort, confidence, and conviction.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we could go all day in that space, because all three of us have trained with Aslan. Shout out for Aslan. Awesome training company, doing wonderful things out there in the world. But the reality is, I could go do Aslan workshops all day long, and I did for a while. But if the people aren't going to use it because their brains aren't in condition to follow the approach that we've given them, what good does it do?
They're not going to do it. That's why coaching is so important, right? And the work that you're doing. How'd you put that? What I say influences what I feel, and how I feel dictates what I do?
Yeah. So just real simple. It's a say, feel, do loop. It's a say, feel, do loop.
Yeah. That's so true.
What I say to myself impacts how I feel, and how I feel impacts what I do.
Yep. So it's so powerful. So now tell me about the name. How'd you guys come up with this? What does it mean?
Dan, you want to take a crack at it?
Yeah. I think there's a few ways to answer that. Have you ever heard of blue zones, Bobby?
No.
Blue zones, they're regions of the world where there's a higher than usual number of people that live much longer than average.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so there's really five blue zones. And so two of the five are, you know, connected to the origin of our name. And so Trexigai comes from two blue zone regions. And we have the Greek word comes from trexemo, which means to run or running. And so we have the beginning of trexemo, which is trex, right? To run, run. And then have you ever heard of ikigai?
Yeah.
Ikigai is a Japanese word, which means one's purpose or one's reason for being. Mm. And so what's really cool about both of these blue zone regions is that, you know, people live a long time because of their diet and physical activity. But number two on the list is their life purpose. And so a lot of these people, these older people, are celebrated in their communities because they're still contributing, right? They still have value. And so we use the first half of Treximo, the last half of Ikigai, and then Trexigai. There you have, which literally means to run on purpose.
I love that. And I think you're so right too. Just because a person retires doesn't mean that they have to give up their purpose, or that they, you know, you're just going to sit in a rocking chair. And, you know, so yeah. I love that. I love the blue zones. Joe, anything you want to add to that?
I want to add to what you just said for a moment, right? So if you're a listener out there, and for some reason you have bought the lie that your job brings you purpose, stop for a second and listen to what I'm about to say. Your job does not bring you purpose, because if it did, I would have had 16 purposes by now. You bring your purpose to your job. So the sooner you can figure out your identity and your purpose and come armed with that, which is what we've now done with Dan, okay? Now I bring my purpose to my job, but I also bring it to my family, my neighborhood, my causes, my community, right? I have one purpose and I'm trying to take that to five peaks.
Yeah. I love that. Because I love that it's not just about our career. It's not just about our job. It's about who we are, you know, at our core, kind of.
Yeah. So Americans make everything about our job, our career, our paycheck, our title, our prestige, right? The blue zones make everything about true wealth, which is health, right? Friendships, meaningful relationships, their purpose, right? Everything's just different in those blue zones. And so, by the way, not to be confused with blue hair or Florida in the winter. Okay. I just want to point that out.
No, I'm glad you did, because I don't want there to be any confusion on it. And, you know, Joe, I have to say too, what a gift for you to sit in that space and listen to people tell their stories. Because I think you guys said earlier, it's an intimate process. Right? Sit in that and really listen at a multitude of levels, that's a tremendous gift. You know, I have to ask you guys this too. What do you think gets in the way of people discovering their purpose or running towards their purpose?
Hey, Dan, take a crack, but be just real quick thing. I want Dan to answer that question. But Bobby, I want to share something with you.
Okay.
This is from my journal the other day. Having had the opportunity to help this client understand their identity and their purpose and kind of activate it, increased my admiration and connection with her.
Mm.
So while you're doing that, while you're literally mining the person's backstory, trying to help them draw out what was already in them, right? They're built a navigation system. We're just trying to help them define it, turn it on, and use it.
That's right.
You can't help but end up admiring the person and connecting with the person. So that's what happened with Dan and I. I fell so in love with what kind of a person goes and runs in the dark, right? Does this
on purpose.
That I asked for permission to interview his running partner. And when I interviewed the two of them, basically their story became the thread for my keynotes for years. And it's the thread going into the book that I'm working on now, right? So Dan, what holds people back? Because, you know, you're recently coming off of the hold back, you know, the guy who benched himself roster. What does it?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think I think, you know, and you're right, Bobby, it is an intimate process. And what's kind of, you know, what's brought me back full circle to this role is really where I started is being a counselor. Because it's all about, you know, the idea of wrestling with truth. It's a noble pursuit. It's not necessarily easy, because there are so many, you know, the what Joe and I like to talk about is, you know, it gives us greater purpose is that we're freeing POWs, prisoners of the world, and the lies that we tell ourselves. And so a couple of typical lies, you know, is on your deathbed, do you want to live a life of self-preservation, or do you want to live a life of empowering and supporting others? And so some of the lies are those self-preservation limitations of, okay, well, it's better for me to jump on the bandwagon and not be judged or banned from others, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe there's fear of me being judged. I'm too insecure, so I don't want to stick my neck out there, because maybe I have some bad neuropathways, some negative bias out there that, you know, there's a deep groove there that's told me, nope, that's the wrong way to go. So to sit with somebody in a non-judgmental way and to really not, you know, just embrace their story and really pour into them and be present with them. That's being a pacer. That's really, you know, that's a noble pursuit. And so there's so many other lies like I did when I was younger, like I'm too young or inexperienced, right? Or what if, you know, I'm too old? You know, I was working in software recently and I was one of the older sales reps. And there were times where I thought, man, am I too old for this gig? I'm 20 years older than most of these people. Or a big one is, hey, my past mistakes are too great. It's better to stay, you know, the safe versus sorry route. And so if you can really assess the condition of an individual and surface those fears and then help them shift to something that is a lot more unchanging, you know, it's a lot more purposeful. It's a lot more impactful. It gets them away from those little lies they tell themselves so they can pursue big things versus the little thing.
Nice.
Bobby, Dan just triggered something. I just was helping a guy about 2 months ago now, I first started working with him. And A, he thought he was too old to learn new tricks, right?
Mm-hmm.
B, some of the mistakes he'd made in the past, you know, weren't reversible.
Huh.
He was wrong on both counts.
Mm-hmm.
So we literally just start the process. We use our, you know, our peak performance scan to help him see his condition from 24 different angles. We focus in on a couple places it's off. And I lead him through a process, 6 exercises to help him, you know, go through his story, basically get his identity clear because it wasn't what he thought it was. Purpose, promise, and a path to walk it out on, right? Fast forward the tape, he's starting to crush it at work. The CEO starts to hire me to coach more people. He doesn't know what I'm doing. Doesn't even know if he wants to know because it sounds touchy-feely, yeah. but it's working, okay? And so he goes off on a 3-week vacation that's got some work intermittent, and you know, because he travels and takes his Winnebago and he's driving out to Montana and he texts his ex-wife from 5 years earlier. They've been divorced for 5 years and he never wanted to be divorced. It was put on him. And he texts her and says, hey, I've been thinking about you. I've gone through a pretty big change. I know who I am. I know why I'm here and I'm living out my purpose. And she says, you know, I'd love to hear more. I'm going to be in Montana too. And so they get together at the same place they originally met and they sit there for 13 hours and he explains how knowing his identity and his purpose and keeping his promise to people at work and wants to keep it to her is literally changing his life. And she said, if you were this guy, I would have never divorced you.
Wow.
And they're now back together. And so he couldn't wait to call me and say, dude, you have no idea the impact this purpose stuff has. And I said, yes, I do.
That's why you do it.
If I didn't know, I wouldn't be doing it. I know. I've lived it, right?
I think the other thing that gets to Joe is so many times people hire a coach for one reason, whether, you know, I don't care what it is, increase sales, whatever it is, it's all connected. Like there's so many layers. And I think that's one of the things that makes it so rewarding because you don't know by putting that into motion, you don't know what will happen next, you know? And I love that story. So thank you for sharing it. I do want to make sure we get to talk to about 2 more things for sure. Tell me about, what is it, Blaze?
Yeah. So Dan came to me about a week ago and we just started talking about these trail markers, you know, that are on there. So you can see them by day, you can see them by night. And I started doing some research and I realized that their official name is Blazes, B-L-A-Z-E-S. So, you know, blazes are these marks on trees, you know, that keep people going. And so we got talking about our role as purpose pacers, you know, people that basically want to help people, you know, experience their best life, run with endurance towards joy. And we realized we should just give them a blaze for business and a blaze for life, just kind of every once in a while, a couple of times a month, we'll just give them one of these. So Dan, share today's because I think it's an interesting topic.
Yeah. So. Well, you're talking about the story that you shared on there or just the main?
No, really just, and we can go into the story, but really just what was the blaze? What was today's blaze? No.
Today's blaze was the best leaders keep us moving and anchored. That's a paradox.
Yes, it is.
But think about
it. But I like that because it's both.
It's both.
Yeah, so the best leaders keep us, right, moving on purpose mm-hmm. and anchored in truth.
Yeah.
And that's what you dedicated your life to, Bobby, right? So we got to keep you moving on purpose, you know, heading towards your full potential, right? And we've got to make sure that you're anchored in truth, not these lies that are actually anchoring you. There, you know,
right.
There's two types of anchors, the one that hold you down so that you can take risks and you can, you know, climb a little higher and jump a little further, and the kind that literally just hold you back so you can't go anywhere.
That's right. It's almost like a chains, like a prison. Okay. So I like that. And then Joe, you mentioned it, you're writing a book. Do you have a working title yet?
I do have a working title. And it's one of the things that makes my heart jump. So purpose is more than a side hustle. It's our built-in navigation system.
Nice. Nice. Now, when do you expect to have that done?
Well, Dan is a pretty hard partner to work with. So he told me that I needed to have it done by the time he goes on the Run Rabbit Run race. So Dan, when is that?
Yeah, that's September the 18th. So yeah, clock's ticking, buddy.
Yeah. So I'm shooting for the 11th so that he can read it during his training right before he runs.
Oh my goodness. And I think I saw a post on LinkedIn that you guys were posting about, and I think Dan, it was, you were saying, what is it? You have to commit to a race date or something like that relative to Joe's book. Am I right?
Yeah. I'm not going to train. But yeah. I mean, it's true. It's truth. I mean, and if there are any runners listening to this or, you know, it takes a lot of effort and energy to build up, you know, to prepare for a race. And I'm not going to get up, you know, in January when it's freezing cold and raining, you know, at 5 a.m. if I don't have something on the calendar that's going to hold me accountable. So mm-hmm. yeah, you got to have a race date on the calendar to do these things. And that's what Joe needed.
Yeah. So how do you feel about the race date, Joe?
I feel awesome about it. And just so you know, the last time I tried to train to run a marathon, Dan was going to be kind enough to run a marathon with me in 2012. Yeah, out on a real road, not in the middle of the woods with bears and cougars. I got about 15 miles was about the longest run I got. And then my knees started to literally look like cauliflower heads. And I called up Dan and I said, what should I do? And he goes, you should stop running for a while and figure out what's going on. So I never was able to run that marathon, but I learned two really important lessons while I was. Number one is you can't cheat a marathon. You either put the work in. So I either write every day at this point or that book will not hit its race date, right?
That's right.
And the second one is you need to focus on the long run. And so the long run for me is when that book is done, that quote I shared earlier that greatly disturbs me mm-hmm. would become less and less of a reality for people. More and more people would realize that purpose permeates every aspect of their life. And it literally focuses their attention and intention on things that matter. And so that people all over the world would have more meaningful relationships, missions, and moments than they've ever had before. And that's my story. That's what happened to me. I pivoted to purpose in 2003. I'm 18 years into it. So I can't run an ultra, but I can go to a conference in Detroit called the Purpose Summit. And I can sit there in a chair and talk about purpose all day long.
That's right. That's right. That's awesome. I love
can't run an ultra, but he has 10,000 times more energy than I have.
Joe's got a lot of energy. Yeah. Yeah. We all know that. So guys, this has been great. How can people learn more and reach out to you guys?
Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah. And so trekstheguy.com is coming. So stay tuned. But for now, I would say you could reach out to either Dan at trekstheguy.com, Joe at trekstheguy.com, TREXAGAI.com. And we're big on LinkedIn as well. So feel free to ping us there. Joe, any other suggestions?
I'm going to add one other thing, Bobby, and you're going to cringe and want to edit this out of it. but I've been doing this for a long time. If you're listening to this and you just feel as though your life is out of alignment, your work is out of alignment, and you need a quicker response, you can text me at my personal mobile, my only mobile, 404-213-8997, and just say, I need a pacer. And I will respond back to you and give you a window of time that I have within 24 to 48 hours. And we'll at least have an initial conversation. It may be that I lead you to somebody like Bobby. Could be that I, you know, just have you go talk with your spouse. but at least you'll know that I'm here and I've got a lot of experience of quickly helping people figure out how to get back in alignment.
Nice. Nice way to deliver on your promise there, Joe, too. All right. Well, thank you guys. This is, and I will not edit that out because I love it. I just want to thank both of you for showing up, for sharing what you do and why you're doing it. And I think there was a lot of gold in this conversation.
Yeah. Bobby, thank you for not only hosting Unyielded, but for being it, because ultimately all of us need to see somebody living a great life story before we'll want to live one out on our own.
Thank you.
Love it. Yeah. Thanks, Joe. Thank you, Bobby. It's been a pleasure and honor to be part of this. So I really appreciate it.
Awesome. I hope that you found a lot of inspiration and value in that conversation. I was really moved by Dan's story of being there for his, as a pacer for his buddy, and how, you know, his heart was breaking, you know, when he thought he was letting him down. And here are my three insights for thriving. Number one, I loved the process, as Joe described it, of looking at the trials and triumphs of your life and then standing at the crossroads and asking yourself these four questions. Number one, what do I do best? Number two, what makes my heart jump? Number three, what greatly disturbs me? And four, how do I make a lasting impact? I love that process for thinking about what our purpose might be in life. I just thought it was really well articulated and I loved the questions. Number two, I think that the simplicity of the say, feel, and do loop is powerful. What I say influences what I feel, and how I feel dictates what I do. This is why our self-talk really matters. If we want to thrive, then we need to become a very critical listener to our inner talk. For myself, years ago, I had to take a very hard stand with the way that I was talking to myself. And I had to stop myself mid-sentence sometimes or mid-thought and say, no, I will not allow you to speak to me or about me that way. Because what we say to ourselves matters. It affects the actions that we take. It affects our lives. And number three, and this is a bonus insight because it came up, unfortunately, in our post-interview conversation when we were still kind of talking about all this. And we were talking about one of the barriers that people sometimes have in terms of pursuing their purpose. And that barrier is that we might fear the fall from the summit, right? And that could mean in terms of losing some status or losing income or the fear of what if we don't make it? And they described that as the valley of change that comes after the false summit. And I don't know, there's just something about that imagery that I really like because somehow it makes it less daunting. It makes it instead just part of the process. And what I also think about as someone that has ridden my bike in a lot of different places, every valley has a natural ending and a new beginning. And that to me is hopeful. I hope that you found some inspiration and some nuggets in that interview. And I encourage you to check out Dan and Joe's work, and all where you can find them is in the show notes. As always, thanks for listening. These stories are for you to help you thrive. If the episodes are helping you to do that, then I hope that you'll help us share the message by leaving us a review and sharing the episode with someone who could benefit from hearing it. I believe that we can all thrive, and I hope that this podcast is a great source of inspiration to you.